We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome, everybody.
We are the Pettiest Bills Podcast.
I'm not bright enough for all of that.
Drew Gator.
Because I thrive off negativity, it's just more hackery from a charlatan and a carpetbagger.
The Rock Pile Report.
My blood pressure's rising.
He gave him Coors at banquet beers out of spite.
The Pettiest, Hardest Drinking Bills Podcast.
I'll go to hell and back just to prove a point.
Uplift desk.
Ladies, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, this is the Rock Pile Report 2024 running back preview. We are here with Mr. Matt Waldman, the Duke Silver of Draft Football Podcast. We actually just recorded a show the other night with EJ Snyder from Bootleg Football. As soon as I mentioned your name, his face lit up. He was like, "Oh, Matt's great." You have this persona. Everybody loves you. Like, you mention your name around people and they light up like a Christmas tree, Matt.
Oh man, that's awesome. That's awesome. That's just I'm glad to hear that, because EJ's great people and he's doing awesome work, he and Brett Coleman together. So nice of them to feel that way.
It's always interesting. Like, I showed my wife and I go, it's a surreal thing when you see a tweet from Matt Waldman and he's like, "Hey, here's the shows I'm doing this week." And you look at the people that you're broadcasting with throughout the course of an entire week, and these people have massive followings. And then there's the Rock Pile Report. And I love that you take time out of your incredibly busy schedule to talk to us year in and year out.
Well, I appreciate that you guys have me on, because, you know, I'm not with a big entity. I'm an independent in what I do, and it's nice to have a following, and it's nice to have people who have even bigger followings than me, you know, like you said, light up or feel, you know, want to have me on a show. But these are, you know, the people who follow your show are diehards, and those are the people who are my audience. The diehards are my audience. You know, the folks who may listen to Chris Harris, I love that they find the RSP and they fall in love with it. And Chris has been great in that regard and sharing me with his audience. But at the same time, there's also a lot of folks who are more just kind of casual fantasy folks that might take one look at what I do and run to the hills, you know, because they're like, "No, that's too much, man. I feel that's too much." Whereas some people are like, "I can't get enough." And this is like an 8-course, this is like a 16-course meal that, you know, every day that I could have of this stuff.
Well, and so I want to open
my type. Yeah.
We just like to drink beer and know a little football, so we need to get some diehard analysts to come in here to explain collegiate football to us so we know what to look for at the end of the month.
And not only that, but for me personally, and this is my sales pitch for anybody out there listening who's interested in the, you know, the rookie scouting portfolio, which is Matt Waldman's baby. So this is the thing. I found out that doing fantasy football prep when I was in my early 20s, it was easy because I had hours to commit to research and poring over data. I'd make my own tables and run my own charts of statistical stuff from, you know, I'd go back years, and this is how bad it got. Like, I'm also a drinker. You all know that. So there would be drafts where I would show up, and it all started, I want to say, in like 2008, 2009, where I overserved myself before the draft had even started, and I made it to the seventh round, and one of my friends elbows me and goes, "So are you planning on drafting any wide receivers?" And it dawned on me I hadn't taken one yet, and my team obviously was terrible that year. So what I started doing was creating this thing that I called the Draft Day Manifesto. And it got that title because at first it started with just a Word document with a bunch of angry notes for myself when I knew I had been drinking, like, draft a wide receiver before round three. Make sure you do this. Or if you don't, like, in all these pivots I could do. And people looked at it and they went, I was like, "Oh, these are my draft notes." They said, "Those aren't notes. That's the manifesto of like a mad person. You could be committed if the right people were to get their hands on this."
Right.
Now that I'm older, I've got kids, I don't have the kind of time. I don't have the time to devote to it. That's where being a subscriber to the RSP has actually been huge for me, because I've still made the playoffs every single year that I play fantasy football, even if I'm just squeaking in. And a lot of it is because of the information that I've gleaned from reading the RSP. You know, it's not just a draft tool. The fantasy football information that you come out with post draft and all of the stuff that you have that's included in this package you're putting out there, it's incredible. And so I have you to thank for the fact that I'm still relevant in fantasy football.
Hey, man, that's awesome. I'm glad to hear that. And that's the design. I mean, you know, the RSP is one of the two most purchased draft guides by NFL evaluators, according to folks like Alex Brown, who's a recruiter at Ole Miss and was the head of recruiting at SMU and Rice for a while, as well as Houston. So he talks with these guys, and he knows what they look at. So I've had some really fun fantasy stories for my career that involve NFL people. Recently, someone told me, for instance, that an owner of a team, and I won't say where because it's probably not the right thing to do for me or for them, is they asked, I'm trying to learn a little more about evaluation and scouting outside of my own room. Who in the public eye should I be listening to? And you know, the two most purchased draft guides, according to Alex Brown, are, you know, Dane Brugler's publication at The Athletic and little old me with the RSP. So what's nice is most people in the public eye, you know, they would hear Dane Brugler and they go, "Yep." And then they'd go, "Who else?" And then they'd say, "Matt Wallman." They go, "Okay, how do you spell that?" And they'd start writing it down. You know, well, apparently this person said Dane Brugler, and he started writing it down, asked for the spelling. Okay, good. Who's next? Said my name, and the guy put the pen down, closed the book, smiled, and said, "Oh, I'm well aware." So there you go. So, but the nice thing is it's rooted in football, but I started as a fantasy guy. I'm senior staff writer football guys, for those of you who may not be aware of that. I've been there since 2009. I started FF Today in 2003. My first article was on a running back by the name of Brian Westbrook and why he was underrated and why he would be good. So, you know, I always catered to both audiences. I try and give you real football through also a fantasy lens. And the post-draft that I do is all really fantasy heavy. But the what most people realize later, because new customers, there's about three things new customers do. One is that they write me and go, "I am totally blown away about what I saw," because you cannot oversell what you do. And you have not. You've told me exactly what it was, and it's still better than exactly what it was. Like, my mind's blown. I am totally shocked, pleasantly shocked at how much I get. Second thing invariably is you undercharge. You should be charging a lot more than you do. And I would pay more. And now I'm a customer for life, and I'm waiting when the early bird period's over to pay the extra money so that you get your extra money. And then the third thing is you told me that the post draft is, you know, part of the package. And when I asked you if I could just buy the post draft because I'm a fantasy guy, and you said, "No, it's a package deal, and you're actually going to come to appreciate the large pre-draft portion even more, especially in redraft leagues later on," I didn't believe you. But now that I'm 3 years into subscribing, and I can still look back 2 to 3 years at the publication and be ahead of all my people on waiver wires because where everyone else in my league is like, who the hell is this guy? And I know who he is, and you've been telling me not to draft him, just add him to my roster when it's expanded in dynasty leagues in the preseason, or keep an eye on him. And if he lands on a team that has a gap scheme, he could be really good. And that guy got out of this. Now he's on this team. Suddenly, he's pretty darn good. And I could add him preemptively before I had to, like, outbid everybody. And now I'm going to the playoffs. Those are basically the three things that happen on an annual basis with the RSP now at this point. So, yeah, man, it's always music to my ears when I hear that.
Well, where can people go to download it?
MattWaldman.com. That's that simple.
Perfect, guys. So make sure you go check that out. Now, the focus of tonight is running backs, you know, because I love picking your brain about this topic. And I guess if we start by taking a look at what the Bills already have on their roster, it's interesting because, well, actually, we have to kick us off. Chris has a cocktail that he would like me to try. He says that they're all, he goes, he has a theme. They're all thematic over the course of our draft series.
Yeah, we're having old fashions. This one is one of my favorites. Because you are a resident of Georgia, It's a Georgia old fashioned. I think it's called R.M. Rose, which is like a bourbon from the first distillery in Georgia.
And
then it is pecan syrup, peach syrup, and peach bitters.
That's why
and
it's so sweet.
It's a Georgia old fashioned.
This is an incredible drink. I don't know if you imbibe, but sir, he can definitely send you this recipe.
Well, it sounds great. And I just, as long as we know, I mean, if it's from Georgia and we're talking running backs, then it's, you know, I know you've got one that will run around you. But generally, they'll run you over, so it might knock you on your ass if you have a few more. You know, if it's anything like a Georgia linebacker or a Georgia running back, it'll knock you on your ass. You know? So anyway,
when we look at the Bills lineup here, I want to pick your brain because a lot of what we have already hinges on the continued growth and maturation of James Cook, and I guess I want to look back and. First of all, when you originally scouted him, because you look at what he accomplished this year just statistically, he ended up in a lot of at the top of a lot of categories alongside names like Christian McCaffrey, Derrick Henry, Kyren Williams. You know, he finished fourth in yards, second in 10 plus yard runs, fifth in yards before contact, and 12th in yards after contact, which for a running back with his frame was surprising. And there's this wonky statistic. Pro Football Reference had him third in success percentage among running backs, which for those of you out there who don't know what that is, they define it as a successful rush gains at least 40% of the yards required on first down, 60% of the yards required on second down, and 100% on third or fourth down with the denominator of rushing attempts. And so the fact that he's third in success percentage means that regardless of down and distance, he's highly effective. When you scouted him initially, what were your thoughts on where his ceiling might be and how close do you think he is to that now?
I think he's pretty close to his ceiling. I saw him pre-draft as someone who was just on the cusp of a rotational starter, meaning that you could put him in a lineup, give him a defined set of tasks that are broad enough that he can be in a starting lineup and he will perform like a starter. And I saw him as a smooth running back who had an excellent feel between the tackles with that breakaway skill, and I thought he could handle physical play. But I wasn't convinced he was close enough on the spectrum of, say, Chris Johnson to be like the feature back that you're going to give him the lion's share of the carries. That said, you know, when you post-draft, when he landed with the Bills, he moved up my board to be, for fantasy purposes, as one of, I think, my top three backs that year because of the fit. And like I saw where they spread the offense. I thought that they would use him wisely between the tackles in ways that would fit well, but they'd also use him a lot in the screen game and the check down game and split out and allow him to do some things he does. From what I've seen now, I would say I still don't think he's Chris Johnson, and I don't think any team's going to guy like Chris, use a guy that size like Chris Johnson. But I think he's at his ceiling, and it's a good ceiling. You know, I mean, he's showing exactly what we just mentioned here, is that he's smooth between the tackles. He can handle the workload as long as they're not trying to, you know, tire people out with him. But they certainly can use him enough on first and second down and vary things in a way where they're getting him enough touches in between the tackles and in space. And, you know, he's as close to a ceiling, I think, as you would expect. And I think they will probably need to get another player and a compliment, someone who will run through you, who will get the hard yards, and you don't have to wear Cook down.
And
because 5'11", 190, 200 pounds, yeah.
Well, with that build, I was surprised when I was going over the statistics at the end of the year, and I saw that he actually finished second in the NFL among qualifying running backs in gap-style runs, which, again, his most dynamic plays seem to come off zone-based concepts. You know, a lot of his 10-plus yard carries, because he's developed his vision enough to where he can kind of string blockers together. He sees how a play develops, and I think he figured out how to tailor, like, his need to find his second gear and when to kind of trigger that burst. And that's helped him rattle off some really explosive runs over the course of this past season. But it was just interesting to see that he actually got more work in a style of running that you wouldn't say is a fit. And that, in your experience, when teams do things like that, they make that decision, is that more them tailoring to the strength of the offensive line versus them tailoring to the running back, or vice versa?
I think it just depends on the philosophy of the coaching staff. Because if you look at Kyle Shanahan, he's just demanding the back do what the offensive line wants. He wants the offensive line to do and what he thinks is the strength and is worthwhile. And he expects a certain type of back, even if he has a different back who has some good skills in another way. But I think with James Cook, I saw him as a back who could do equally well in zone and gap. Chris Johnson is the example again. What made him gap style plays are seen for two different types of backs. Either the banger, who's just like Leonard Fournette, who's got some speed, but you know that the movement skills aren't great, so you're not going to ask this guy to jump cut and make a lot of different stop-start moves, because I've always joked that he's like an 18-wheeler tractor-trailer who's trying to go through a toll booth, and the gap game is the kind of game where they say, this is the toll booth, you can just run right through that thing. But a zone blocking scheme is more where you don't know which toll booth along that whole row is going to be open on the 8-lane highway. And they might tell you, like, within, you know, 30 yards for, you know, a truck, that the one on the far right is open. And if Leonard Fournette's that truck, he's going to wipe out and take out the whole toll booth trying to make that change of direction. Whereas, you know, James Cook could do both. And that's the one type that does gap. The other type is the speedy back, ultra quick, who can hit it fast enough that he has momentum generated power, or he's so quick that no one's going to catch him because of the fact that he can stop start quick enough to manipulate that one gap and then hit it so fast that no one will get there. So he's a good fit for either one.
So then when I look at Ty Johnson, his backup, now this was something of kind of found money. He was a running back that didn't really get a lot of playing time in New York. And then he was out there on the way. I believe they picked him up on waivers. It was like early in the season. We added him to the practice squad, and then because of injuries, he found his way into the starting lineup. And they realized this guy can catch the football, and for being like for a running back with his size, he has a little bit more north-south to his game. And I think that that's valuable in what the Bills do. And last year he wasn't a slouch by any stretch, but he's not a player that, like, let's say James Cook is injured. He misses a game, you know, a game or two. He's not a player that I would look at and say, don't worry, it's fine, we can tailor an offensive attack because we have Ty Johnson. I think he's more of a complementary piece than anything else. Is that a fair assessment?
I think it is. He's a good gap runner. He's got that nice speed. He's a good punt returner and special teams coverage guy. Mm-hmm. And that's why he's in Buffalo more than anything, his special teams are good. But he is no slouch as a runner. I mean, I think the Jets showed a little bit in their awfuldom of what Ty Johnson actually was pretty good. So he can catch the ball. He can be a leak out receiver. You can run him on screens. He'll give you some skill on some gap running, but you know, he's not the guy that against loaded boxes trying to stop the run is going to move the chains as well as what Cook could probably do. So yeah, those are your two running backs. If you ask me, you have a third guy in Darrington Evans, but
do we, do we?
Darrington Evans, I would say, is a fast guy. He's like, they're all the same guy to varying levels of skill. James Cook is the fastest, the quickest, the wisest between the tackles, and the most versatile. Ty Johnson is versatile. He's fast. He's not as quick, and he's not quite as savvy. Darrington Evans is fast and probably needs a compass to help with some of the run scheme stuff that he needed, at least when he entered the league. Okay, so he was a good college player who just didn't have a lot of sophistication for the run game, and I don't think he's earned enough at Tennessee or in Chicago or wherever else he's been since then to really be labeled that guy unless he's shown some growth.
So when we talk about the makeup of this draft class, because it's obvious the Bills need a little something here, and the fact that they haven't signed any free agents ahead of the draft to really backfill that outside of Ty Johnson kind of tells me that maybe they're looking into some of the depth players in this class. But there's this interesting thing as I was doing podcast research for this. It's a funny fact. Only three Super Bowl winners over the last 16 years have had a 1,000-yard rusher on their roster when they won it. And I think that's a really important trend to note when you consider how you dole out assets to build a cap-solvent roster. And it's one of those things where you don't need an explosive bell cow running back anymore, right? You need an explosive offense and a good line that can give running backs who have talent opportunities to make plays. You know, you don't need gone are the days where you say to yourself, I need a I was thinking about some of the
Adrian Peterson.
Well, I was thinking about guys who I used to think, you know, they would be on every fantasy roster back in the early mid 2000 and aughts, Ruben Drones. Those guys don't exist anymore. You don't need that guy. Because there was nothing really remarkable about him athletically. It's just that he was durable and he could absorb a lot of carries. So what I did was I went back and I took a look 20 years ago, took 2023 and 2024. There was 18 running backs who had more than 1,000 yards. And by 2023, that number has dropped to 12. But I think what's really telling about patterns and usage and how you need a whole room to kind of be a complete football team in this regard, 2013, 13 players with more than 300 rushing attempts, four of them with over 350. Jamal Lewis and Ricky Williams that year combined for 779 carries. That's absurd. That's an absurd usage rate. And then these are all the guys with 1,000 yards.
The good old days.
Yeah. In 2004, nine players with 1,000 yards and over 300 rushing attempts. Four of them had more than 350. Fast forward to 2023, of the 12 players who had more than 1,000 yards, no one had 300 carries. Not Derrick Henry, not Christian McCaffrey, and those are the guys that we as fantasy football fans look at and say, that's a bell cow. That's a guy who half of my offense is that guy. And yet those guys aren't touching the ball nearly as much as they used to. It's a sign of where the league is headed. And then the success percentage thing that I was talking about earlier. In 2023, there was only one running back who had a success rate of over 55%. And he was Priest Holmes. And I know Priest Holmes won a lot of people a lot of fantasy leagues back in the early 2000s. In 2004, there was one player with a success percentage over 55%, and that was Edgerrin James. And Edgerrin James was an all-timer.
The best running back ever.
He's an all-timer. In 2023, there was five. Five running backs with a success percentage over 55%. And then there was three more right behind him with 54.5. They were just knocking on the doorstep. So that's eight running backs who had, if you're just looking for efficiency, pretty elite efficiency. And I think that speaks to the fact that you're not looking for bell cows anymore. Now it's about just explosion and then package fit inside of a running back room. Is my synopsis of all this and the transition of the game, like, do you think that that's fair?
It can be, yeah. And I'd say the reason I'm saying it can be is that a lot of it has to do with the fact that they've made it the game easier on quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. They've spread the field and adopted from the college game, so that now it's more about quarterbacks who run a little bit and can use their legs to create mismatches in the box for running backs. So the success rate's going to be higher because now they have better box advantages than what they got in those early 2000s. So there's a little bit of that going on there. And it, again, they've softened the rules so that it encourages teams to throw, and it's a more quick hitting basketball style, soccer style game. So that's true. Now, the fascinating thing about it is because of cover two and because of other types of coverages out there, we've also seen that the EPA for runners has actually, in the past 2 years, has gone back to what it was 10 years ago at the highest levels of success in terms of efficiencies because of the fact that teams are trying to take away the deep game. Because if it were me, you know, if I decided to put on like my buddy Ryan, screw it, I don't care about anything, and I'm going to do what I want to do and don't care if I get fired, I'll just punch the owner out on the way out. I would probably, in this NFL, I would probably design a team where I would just run through you and over you with all your little safeties disguised as linebackers, mm-hmm. And all your light little defensive tackles who qualified as big inside linebackers for the Pittsburgh Steelers back in the 1990s. LeVon Kirkland probably be playing defensive tackle right now. You know, I'm kidding, but a little bit of hyperbole. But, but you know where I'm going with this. So it's like... Well,
and look at his son. You mentioned Buddy Ryan. That's what Rex Ryan tried to build here in Buffalo. He even said, look, I'm going to build a bully. We're going to trade away Kiko Alonso, and we're going to bring in LeSean McCoy while he still has tread on the tires. We're going to bring in Tyrod Taylor, and we're going to be an offense that runs the hell out of the football and has a mobile quarterback who we hope can uncork a deep ball now and again. And that was the offense, and it almost worked.
Yeah, it almost did. It's just the problem is that you need a little bit better quarterback than what you got.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's exciting, and I like Tyrod and all that. But, yeah, you needed someone who, when the defense painted you into a corner, that you could Terry Bradshaw, Brett Favre, John Elway your way out of it.
Yeah.
And Tyrod wasn't going to do that, you know. But that's – you're absolutely right, and I think teams could still do that. And I would be interested, though, with your stat, though, about Super Bowls, how many teams that have went to the Super Bowl with 1,000-yard rushers.
Well, that's it. How many
the
went?
Other team,
because the other
team – not who they won, but just who went. Because the ones that went, there were a good bit of them where the run game was very important. But
100%.
It still leads to your point that they used a committee.
Yep.
At least two backs.
Everybody had one. And so we've started to get used to this. Like, you know, the joke was that safeties this offseason in free agency had become the new running backs because they're kind of being treated like the redheaded stepchildren when it comes to being paid. Except all of a sudden all hell broke loose 3 weeks ago. And some of the – I went back and looked. Over – it was $115.1 million in guaranteed money were doled out to running backs this year in free agency, the most of the last 8 years. And five different players have double-digit guaranteed dollars in their contracts, which is, if you think about this trend we're discussing and how it's committee-based and it's, can I build an offense and have a bunch of different talent types to cobble together and make like a Swiss Army knife of a running back room, this is a gross outlier in what we have come to believe is the norm. And so I've got a really lazy question to ask you. Is all of this free agent market activity kind of an indictment of this year's running back class?
No, it's actually an endorsement of the fact that Aaron Jones, Josh Jacobs, Derrick Henry are really good.
Okay.
Really good football players who other teams didn't want to pay as much because they knew they'd have to pay them for multiple years and their teams weren't good enough to win using that money. Because like you said, or you alluded to begin all this, you get a running back when your team is ready to contend. you get that top guy not to build around. I mean, like, you know, Saquon Barkley was a mistake for the Giants in the sense that they didn't have a quarterback or a team to build around, and they were trying to build around a running back without a quarterback. Now, the Eagles are still in a contention window. Even if they lost Kelce, you know, that kind of thing, they still are in a contention window. They have their quarterback. They have their wide receivers. Now, Saquon Barkley is going to make Tiki Barber rue the day that he over opened his damn mouth. He fumbled at the mouth. He needed to like apply Tom Coughlin's like ball security techniques to his yeah. You know, and I love Tiki Barber's game, but that was just so stupid to talk to talk smack about.
Why fire up a guy who's proven that he can dig and work?
Look, I was always Nick Chubb over Saquon Barkley through and through from the beginning. But if there's a year I'm getting Saquon Barkley at almost all costs, it's this year. I mean, this guy.
It feels personal, this one.
He's going to run roughshod through this league. I mean, if he gets hurt, fine, he gets hurt, and then that doesn't happen. But if he stays healthy, he is running roughshod through this league. He's going to make DeAndre Swift last year look like the guy that he really is. You're going to see the difference between these two guys. He's going to make Miles Sanders look like the backup that he was to Saquon Barkley when he was in Philadelphia. So, point being is that the Bills are in a position that they can get a running back. And this class, everyone says sucks, okay? But let's remember something, because we can judge by fantasy terms. It's a pretty good way of judging whether a class is good or not, because most fans look at it that way. They go, okay, did we get a good starter? You know the difference between a good class, most people think's a good class, and a bad class? Plus or minus one running back. So three's a good class if you got three guys who gave you at least a year of good starter skill. Two's like average, and one's bad. You know, I mean, there maybe a few years ago there was like, I think it was more than a few years ago, so 2017 class maybe, the Christian McCaffrey class with Aaron Jones and a bunch of the good guys that were from there, Cook's older brother, Dalvin. You know, there are a number of guys in that group that I think there were like six, which was like an outlier of how good that was, because you haven't seen anything close to six. Because the next year, it was Saquon Barkley, Nick Chubb, Royce Freeman, Darius Geis. Justin Jackson, Rashad Penny, okay, and Sony Michel, who people thought was better than everybody but Saquon Barkley. And the only two that came out of that, there were three. The only two that came out of it, though, long-term, were Saquon and Nick. And the best one after that, or the best, I think the best two after that, excuse me, were undrafted free agents, Philip Lindsay and Austin Eckler.
Okay.
All those other guys that were like awesome, that, you know, Penny, Geis, Michelle, hurt or didn't quite perform up to expectation. You know, so, you know, the hype one way or the other, this class, if you ask me, there's one guy who you're going to give a red shirt year to because he's hurt. There's a really safe guy. And then from number 3 to number 12, it just depends on where they land and whether or not they make minor improvements to one to two things that are going to matter for their game and the offense that they're in. And you could scramble them, and I won't tell you no if, you know, Marshawn Lloyd turns into be one of the top three backs in this class. Braylon Allen turns out to be one of the top three backs in this class.
You wouldn't be shocked
Amani
by any of
Vidal,
that.
Blake Watson, Dylan Johnson, who nobody even talks about. You know, all of those guys. There's literally 8 or 9 guys that could fit that description.
Well, so let's talk about the description of what it seems like the Bills have wanted as kind of a counterpunch to James Cook in this offense. Because it's notable that last year, we not only paid, sought out, intentionally signed and paid, but then also had to play 4 different NFL players. Ty Johnson, Damian Harris, Latavius Murray, and Leonard Fournette. And when you look at the game of the last 3, right, who are, you know, Damian Harris unfortunately had to retire due to the neck injury he sustained here. Latavius Murray was the one that got leaned on the most. Now, a lot of that was because His size and his pass pro ability was a major asset to a pass heavy team like ours. Hands are pretty good. Fairly reliable with the football. And well, he's not exactly a dynamic pass catching threat because he's never a threat to take a wheel route up the seam. You're never going to see Latavius Murray do that. But on a leak to the sideline, if you're trying to get four and you can get it on just, hey, I'm a safety valve. No one's coming, so I'm gonna outlet and I'm going to make myself available and then turn upfield quickly. He did really well in that because his hands were pretty reliable. So it was physicality. He vultured, like those guys vultured a ton of touchdowns from James Cook. You mentioned Chris Johnson and about how he's never going to be Chris Johnson, James Cook. The one dynamic they do have in common is that early on in their careers, they do all the work between the 20s and then some fat guy, you know, for Chris Johnson, it was Lendale White. Latavius Murray comes in and steals the red zone touches. Or in this case, half the time it's Josh Allen who steals those red zone touches. But they want a guy who's a little bit bigger, a little bit sturdier, and has chops as a pass protector. And that's not, you know, people say, oh, it can't be that hard. Pass protection is not for every running back. You know that after watching so much film, right?
Absolutely. So the guys that you mentioned, okay, let's just cross out some names on the list, okay? Let's just cross guys off. We don't even need to talk about them for the Bills. Blake Corum. He's going to be a feature back somewhere else because – and he's too alike with James Cook to want to go that route. Jalen Wright, same type of deal, okay? Also not a great pass protector. You can then take Will Shipley, Dylan Lobby, and Blake Watson off your board because they're James Cook types, you know, in terms of closer to archetype. So that leaves us, you know, we can go from early to late. Let's go. One of the guys who will probably be a little too early for the Bills' taste because I'm sure they're going to look elsewhere for maybe another wide receiver.
That's become a friggin' need.
That might become a need, you know. So Jonathan Brooks of Texas, you're probably not going to be looking at him because unless you just think, we'll wait a year and we might end up with a feature back. Mm-hmm. He's the best pass protector in this class. He's also the best running back in this class. He'd also be one of the top three running backs in last year's class, if you ask me.
Okay.
He is what people thought, people who were having fever dreams of Melvin Gordon at Wisconsin, of what they thought he would be in the NFL. They were actually looking into the future at Jonathan Brooks. Jonathan Brooks is a very, very adept running back. Blake Corum, we already mentioned, somewhere else. Jalen Wright, not much of a pass protector. We talked about him. We talked about these other guys. So then you're not getting Brooks in the first round. Trey Benson, if he falls a bit, he can catch. He's got size to become a better blocker than he is, and you can probably live with his foibles a little bit as a blocker year one because you know he's got speed to burn and he's a good gap runner who you could give those tough yard runs to where your attitude runs. He could be that guy. He gives you kind of a bigger Marlon Mack when Marlon Mack was supposed to be really good or an Isaiah Pacheco type of player who runs hard and can do that. My favorite player who you can probably get in the fourth, fifth, or sixth round is Dylan Johnson, the Mississippi State transfer to Washington. Mike Leach said he wasn't tough enough, and he wasn't very tough, so he's glad he left. It wasn't that he wasn't tough on the field. It was that he got hurt a fair bit. But he played through injuries this year and was a really integral part of Washington's offense. He can catch. He might have some of the better hands in this class. He's a good dump-off receiver. He is not the fastest guy. 4.68 was his 40, but he also played on two ankle injuries and a knee injury all year that never healed because he got hurt late in the Texas game and then had to play with a wrapped up knee. And he was getting acupuncture pretty much all year on his legs to he toughed his way through it. So they hadn't fully healed yet when he's competed in the combine. Mm-hmm. So if he's 4.68 at that, he's probably more like a 4.58, 4.55, which is totally acceptable. And the dude runs like a hot knife through butter when he runs through the middle of the line. He breaks a lot of tackles. He drags defenders. He bounces off a lot of hits. He'll run through multiple tackles on carries. In between the tackles and not. He's an attitude runner who has excellent vision. He can run gap or zone. He's smart. He reminds me of backs I'm a sucker for. Okay, whether if it's a late round back like Alex Collins or Spencer Ware, or a more a guy who should have been drafted early but was said he wasn't very tough because they didn't like his philosophy major at Tennessee, and that was Arian Foster. Okay,
Arian Foster, you know, he's one of my favorite stories in like the last 25 years of football. There's a lot of compelling stories. Arian Foster might be my favorite because he admitted, I remember watching an ESPN 30 for 30, and he, not 30 for 30, but it was like one of their E60s. And he was talking to them about his draft process, and he goes, I was immature. He goes, but I also felt burned because I went back to college thinking, you know, my coach talked me into coming back. I was there for the colors, man. I'm going to be here for you. And then his line leaves and all these people leave and he's a man on an island and all of his numbers tanked. And then he got hurt or banged up a little bit. And all of a sudden, he's not a third-round pick anymore. It's the fourth round. It's the fifth round. He goes, it's the sixth round. And the Seahawks called me and said, hey, we're thinking about drafting you. And he goes, don't draft me. I don't care. And then they hung up and they didn't draft him.
Yeah.
And he goes, looking back at it, that was my immaturity, but I wasn't ready yet. Yeah. I wasn't ready yet.
Wow. Yeah, well, it's too bad because he could have won some Super Bowls.
Yeah.
But, you know, but that's okay because my favorite back made me a Seahawks fan when he got traded from the All-Star team.
Marshawn Lynch?
Yes.
I maintain he's been one of the most entertaining running backs.
Yeah.
On the field, off the field, just.
He's my running back to defend the planet. If aliens took over this planet and said, I wrote a series. If you want to go to Matt Waldman RSP and look at the team to defend the planet, I had a bunch of writers do an exercise over a decade ago where I did Independence Day for football, where they came down and said, listen, we want to invade. We're going to invade and we're going to send you to our mines to be workers for us. We have this sense of culture where we also have football in our galaxy, and we can reanimate anybody for a limited period of time to their peak physical abilities. So we're going to challenge you for the planet. Instead of having war, we're going to play a game of football, and you can reanimate anybody you want to have your team. Who's going to be your team? So Marshawn Lynch was my running back to defend the planet. And there are a lot of reasons why, and I won't get into all of that, I had him slightly over Adrian Peterson when I scouted both of them, and I loved Adrian Peterson. I made one too many people watch Adrian Peterson film in college, like in the way that like a proud papa shows slides of their kids, you know, and nobody wants to see him after like slide number five, you know. That's what I was doing with Adrian Peterson, but I liked Marshawn Lynch more because I didn't want anybody to know about him. But anyway, Dylan Johnson. Fantastic runner. The next one on that list, I would say, is Kamani Vidal out of Troy. He's what the people who had fever dreams about DeAndre Swift but didn't understand that he's a good starter but a limited starter. They're looking in the future and looking at possibly what Kamani Vidal could do. He's also one of the better pass protectors in the class. He's not a great pass catcher, but you don't need him for that. You're going to have him be a pass protector, and you're just going to use him on dump offs and screens.
Yes.
He has good contact balance. He is a good tackle breaker. Speed is good. Acceleration is strong. He understands how to run between the tackles. He can run gap or zone. He's more of an Ahmad Bradshaw type, if you remember Ahmad Bradshaw, or a plus version of what he could. He could become a plus version of DeAndre Swift or a plus version of Jaylen Warren. And if he like somehow outpaces every expectation we thought, and we're like, holy cow, this guy's great, we might start thinking he's kind of an off-brand Maurice Jones-Drew. I don't think he's ever going to get there, but there's that.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So there's a couple guys I'd like to ask about because it's something that Bills fans have been kicking around that I hear about that I've also looked at, and I say, okay, in this vein, and it's interesting to me that your top three, these guys aren't even anywhere near it. Of course not. That's because you're the professional here, and I'm just a guy with a glass of whiskey and a Montucky. So let's call it what it is.
My running back rankings have always been a little different from the norm, but I've always seen – the running back is a position that has to process in the middle of the field.
Yes.
And the NFL's just catching up to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you have me on every year.
Exactly.
Even though I have my misses, I've kind of been ahead of the game at running back. People are catching up that I actually do other positions than running back now. But it is fun that I get to do this because I look forward to this show more than any because it's my favorite position.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. So here's a question. A lot of Bills fans are talking about Braylon Allen and about how he might be a fit for what the Bills are looking for as a complement to James Cook. Knowing what you know about our offense and James Cook and what he brings, what do you see in Braylon Allen? Because it's interesting that I haven't heard his name at all as you've been talking about these running backs you love.
Well, yeah. Now, I did mention earlier that he could end up being the number three back in this class.
Yeah.
Or one of the top three producers in this class if the right things happen. Going to the Bills would be one of the right things that could happen because he's a good inside zone and gap runner. And that's probably how they would use him. He has speed for his size. He is powerful. He's got contact balance. He can catch reasonably well. And he's kind of got that, like, you see him and go, ooh, he could be the next coming of Larry Johnson or a Jamal Lewis type of player, especially early in his career where all the people who do models go all geeked out when he had that one strong season early on in his career. You know, the talent's there, but integrating everything that he does well has been absent from his game. He's got footwork. It doesn't always apply in the situations he should apply it. He has power. But he should be like plus. I have him ranked at elite power, but by the definition of what I would call that to be, but you know, let's just put it this way. Let's think of Derrick Henry has elite power. We can all agree on that. Marshawn Lynch and Adrian Peterson had a tier above Derrick Henry in the power department. And if you don't believe that, then I'll just give you another name. Take another guy wearing that Love You Blue jersey by the name of Earl Campbell and go watch Earl Campbell against the Rams and tell me if Derrick Henry had anything remotely like a run like that. Because that's another level of elite power. Braylon Allen looks like a guy who, if he figured out how to align his hips with his pads when he strikes rather than trying to run around people, he tries to hit people with his pads with his hips turned to the boundary so that he can bounce off and run around rather than to drive through. If he decided to say, I'm 235 pounds, screw you, I'm running through you.
Well, that's it. That's football. It's generating power, and it's usually from your quads and your hips and up.
Yeah.
And so what happens in those moments is – it's almost like you have to make – we've heard it from guys like Zach Moss. I'm going to make people make business decisions. You have to make a business decision at some point. You got to decide, are you going to be the type of running back who tries to run around, or are you going to commit to running through? Because you can't live in both.
Listen, I don't know if you guys know this or not, but early on, you know, I had people ask me as I started to kind of get a name for picking running backs. They said, how did you learn about running? I said, there's a lot of things I learned, a lot of people I learned from, but one of the people I learned from a lot of notable things from was linebacker Chris Spielman. Watching, listening to Chris Spielman talk about running backs when I was studying them at the time, I learned so much from him, from a linebacker who had to tackle them, you know, and a very cerebral, tough-minded, you know, old-school linebacker. Mm-hmm. And that was part of it. And Braylon Allen's kind of like Michael Bush way back in the day.
Yep.
You know he could run through people if he wanted to, but he's got to stop acting like he's
you're not a ballerina.
5'8", 185-pound running back.
Yeah.
Sometimes he's got to put the hard hat on and say, yes, I'm going to do this, like you said. So he could, in a game where they limit him to, like, look, you're our bull. Be the bull. You're not going to get a ton of bull type of carries until the end of the game, but you can be that. And then if we really need you to be a little more versatile, we'll let you do that too. But we're going to yell at you and give you we're going to make sure you understand what your job is here. And if you don't do it, you're not going to be here very long.
Yeah.
But he's that guy. A guy who might end up being just as good if Braylon Allen doesn't play to his potential, but this guy, the light's turned on for him, if it's turned on for him, is Kendall Milton of Georgia.
Okay.
Who was a 5-star running back. The top two running backs in that class coming into the college game were Bijan Robinson and Kendall Milton. I thought Kendall Milton had a chance to become like the next Eddie George. He didn't. He doesn't have the speed. Okay, he's a 4.62 runner, but he's got good short area burst. He looked like the light turned on for him recently, where it's like, oh, yeah, I didn't get to be – I was a 5-star prospect. No one really cares anymore. What do I do?
Okay.
You know, and he can run through people. He has good contact balance. He's good footwork. He's a smart runner. He kind of fits – he could be your Tyler Algier type of player, or a Jordan Howard type of player with maybe a little bit more explosion. There's Audric Estime.
So I've got two guys, Audric Estime and Isaac Arendo.
Those are the next two on my list.
And that was it. So I've got them here in front of me because you've got, and am I saying this right? Guerrero?
I think it's Guerrero. I don't know, to be honest. I don't listen to anybody anymore since Chris Spielman's not doing commentary anymore. I don't listen to anybody.
What I know is that Guerrero is this big, sturdy player who everyone kind of, as expected, ran a little slower 40 time because he's 6'2", 221. I think the thing the Bills fell in love with when it came to Latavius Murray is that he was 6'3". 240 something pounds. He was almost as big as the linebackers who were trying to blitz. This is a big, heavy running back. Now, he's not as tall and he's not sudden, but he's almost, you know, I read about it. So then I went back and I go, okay, can I find some highlight reels of just him blocking? Because you know what it is. If you don't have access to tape, quote unquote, then you're stuck watching highlight reel things, but it's always running plays. It's always, look at this catch, and he runs down the sideline after shedding two tackles. But the reps where I got to watch him pass protect, he almost seems mean about it. It's almost like he enjoys a little bit of that physicality with pass rushers. What's your take on him?
Well, one thing I'm going to add that maybe give you a little more nuance than what you may have seen is that Isaac Arendo ran a 4.33 at the NFL Combine.
See, and that's it. I think everyone thought he was going to be slow.
No, yeah, he ran a 4.33. Not only did he run a 4.33, he had a 6.943 cone drill, which is elite.
So he's an agile dude for being as big as he is.
And he had a 41.5 vertical leap. So suddenly all the draft people who didn't know anything about Isaac Arendo are suddenly watching feverishly because they saw what he did at the Combine and go, well, you know, there's three ways of looking at it. You got the fans' view, which is, well, if he was so good, why is he on special teams behind Braylon Allen at Wisconsin and then splitting time with Jawar Jordan at Louisville? Why is that happening? The other answer is maybe it's that he really is a good athlete, and Raylan Allen was really good too. So there's a reason that he was behind him. So is that Chaz Malusi kid who was a top recruit at Clemson before coming to Wisconsin. So Guerrero is a terrific athlete. He's got starter physical skills. He'd be very good in a gap scheme. Right now, he could help you in that level. And he's a good special teams player. He was valued for special teams. Yeah, what's the one team in the league that values special teams more than just about anybody? You know, so he's going to be a guy who you could possibly knock Ty Johnson off the roster or allow Johnson to be the main special teams guy. But what he does with, let's just say, his blocking, there's potential there. He's got to get a little bit better. And what it is, you know, he does a good job of getting deep in the pocket. That's important when you're trying to square up defenders who are blitzing inside. He gets that squat position you want so that you're not knocked on your behind and you can generate a power base if you roll through the hips to strike. And he does deliver his hands with the position you want to see with that uppercut motion. But he doesn't and he doesn't punch until he's closed that gap. So everything's there, except he doesn't drive through his hips yet. And that's the hard thing to develop with timing as a running back anyway, but it's something that's good. The good thing is he doesn't overextend. He doesn't lead with his head, and a lot of backs do that.
Well, because you get Olaid at that point. The guy just bypasses you, and you see it a lot.
Yeah.
Like, and we watched it early. It was a problem for James Cook. They said early on, they looked at James Cook and they said, listen, we know you're a good receiving back, but if the ball's not coming to you, you're a bad pass protector and we can't put you on the field. We can't.
Yeah. And see, that's the thing with Guerrero, his outside, his edge protection is his weak point. He either overruns and gives up the inside too easy, or when he works inside out, he's not quick enough to gain position against edge defenders, and he ends up delivering a shot that is just merely a speed bump on the way to the pocket.
Yeah.
Now, it's not that he's not quick enough physically. He's not anticipating.
It's the processing.
His feet. Yeah, it's all the processing and the footwork. Everything has to become more ingrained, but all the skills are there for him to become very good. He's an intriguing player, and he's the type of guy you could probably get in round five.
See, this is it. This is where we're talking about, where right now running back feels like a luxury pick for the Bills, given all of our other newfound needs.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's still talent to be had here that you can develop and make useful to yourself. I think Audric Estime is in this same conversation. So if we're talking about him, I mean, I look at – he's probably a first down, second down roll, although that's not really how that works anymore. You don't use your grinder on early downs. Maybe short yardage roll. I mean, the lack of lateral agility is what I don't like about his game.
He's got good feet.
Feet,
but he's not. Yeah, he's got good feet. So he can get over tackles. He's efficient with his movement, but no, he's not Cook, but
no.
He doesn't need to be.
But he doesn't
he's
need to
more,
be.
He's more, I would describe his game as inevitable. You know it's coming. You can't stop it when it's on. So, like, that's a good attitude runner. Think of, like, Chris Carson.
Okay.
Chris Carson's kind of like, that's what he's aspiring to be. Maybe he's the only guy I can give you. He's an old school guy, probably before y'all's time. But former Giant Gary Brown, who used to play with the Oilers. He was like nearly 300 pounds at one point and was out of the NFL and then came back and ran for over 1,000 yards. Then he got hurt, and after like 5 years, Bill Parcells brought him back and made him a starter, and he gained 1,000 yards in the 30s. Okay. Like, not a fast guy.
That's the most improbable career arc I've ever heard of. Hey, 1,000 yards, then you're fat, now you're back, 1,000 yards. Like, that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
That's
actually
a movie.
It was nobody got fat. Lost weight, gained 1,000 yards, then got hurt at Anonymous. Bill Parcells, come on back. I'm going to make you the lead back, 1,000 yards. Yeah, playoffs. You know, he was a very talented guy with good feet, get over people, make little efficient movements. He's a good gap runner, Estime is. His speed, you know, you say, well, the pro day was better. Pro day is always going to be better.
Yeah.
It's and scouts know this.
Yeah.
They already have a fudge factor for this stuff. And We could get into timing and all that, but that'd be a whole other show.
Yeah.
I've done a show on it. You can go to you can go into the Going Deep podcast at Matt Waldman's RSPcast, and you can find that. I have a track specialist who's a former running back who he and I do shows with, Brandon Angel. He's great.
Now I will say this. I selfishly want to ask about Jason McClellan just because I'm an Alabama fan, but realistically, here's the thing I want to end the show with. You made a point, like throughout this podcast, one of the common themes about all these running backs we've been speaking on is the fact that if this guy develops, and if he can develop a little piece of his game, he'll be better. And if this guy can develop a little bit of this and a little bit of that, you were recently on a podcast, and I'm sorry if it's escaping me. I had to go listen to it because I saw your tweet about it. And I saw a tweet that was like, Matt Waldman came on our show and made this super salient point. I said, well, now I need to hear it in its entirety. A snippet won't do. And I went and found it, and it was you waxing poetic on the idea that the modern NFL, one of the problems is that the NFL is not for teaching you. The NFL treats you, you know, like most businesses, they hire a person, and their thing is, okay, we can train you to be what we want you to be. The NFL brings you in and says, you need to be able to pass the test because most of us aren't doing a whole lot of coaching. We're not or a whole lot of teaching. We expect you to be what we needed you to be. And if you failed, it's because you didn't work hard enough to find it. How much of a detriment do you think that that dynamic is to a running back class like this, where you've got so many players who have just one or two things that if they corrected in their game, they could be upper echelon players. They could be name and known players. They could be fantasy relevant players. And yet there's this dynamic that could hamper most of them from hitting that threshold.
I'd say that's the case every year, to be honest. So it's not any different with this class than it is with other classes. But it's just the fact that, and also running back, I've always said, is like if you're going into a casting call as a running back, and really football in itself, that's the problem, is a lot of people view football in a corporate sense and try and make that corporate connection because most people are in corporate America, and it's understandable. Mm-hmm. But if you've ever had a performance-related career, not sales performance, like stage performance, if you've ever had to be on a stage for a living, you realize that the people expect you to be a finished product, even if you aren't, and that you better get good quick if you are not, or you better figure out a way to be good enough at least in the areas that they're expecting. And the NFL is a stage performance medium. And that's why they get quarterbacks wrong. That's why also teams, when people say, oh, they'll get coached up, the first thing you want to know, the first thing that you should know is that if you're saying they should get coached up, have a couple of drinks. Okay?
Or done. Done. I'll see you there.
Have a couple of drinks. And then so you can get, and as long as you're not a mean drunk. And then if you're a happy drunk, then I can tell you, you don't know what the F you're talking about. Right now, you know, because every college player, every pro player will tell you that they coach the scheme. That's the everything spent on situational football, making sure everybody knows the playbook, everybody's getting reps with the plays, that they understand the game plan that they're facing, because there's a lot of material that's being put out there. Playbooks are voluminous because they got to trick people, you know, just as much as they can out-athlete them. You know, they're not Bo Schembechler back at Michigan where you can run, or Woody Hayes, and you can run like five plays and then have a couple of trick plays, and you're going to out-athlete people because you got the best athletes in the region. You know, Alabama still does that. Ole Miss used to – I mean, that's why Mike Wallace would say, hey, I didn't even understand anything about routes or coverages until I went to the Senior Bowl. He literally told people at the Senior Bowl, I didn't know, because they brought me as an athlete. And I've had so many players tell me that. And so, you know, the NFL, though, they're expecting you to learn. We're paying you. You're on your own time. Figure it out. Mm-hmm. You know, Tony Gonzalez, I always tell that story. He's second year in the league, led the league in drops, got mad at himself about it. Brother gave him a book written by Pat Riley, coach of the former Lakers coach. He started to realize, I got to develop my own development plan. And he created one, and he was like, okay, position coaches. And many of these position coaches who are going to coach people up, you know, your running back position coach was a cornerback. mm-hmm. you know, in high school.
Yes.
And that's it. Or a Division I safety, you know. I mean, one of my good friends, Ryan Riddle, who played in the NFL for the Raiders, the Jets, the Falcons, the Ravens. I think that's the he was the all-time sack leader at Cal and played with Marshawn Lynch and Aaron Rodgers. He was on those teams.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, he had the single season record for sacks. Very savvy player. He joked his claim to fame was that he successfully covered Randy Moss in practice as an outside linebacker on a route, you know. But he, you know, he had some tools. But the point being is that at Cal, he said he had to convince his defensive ends coach that he and his teammates should be allowed to freelance more and not try and run the scheme exactly the way it was. And the coach was really mad about them trying to do that stuff, and he wanted to stick to what's going on. And he said, Coach, he finally sat down and said, Coach, listen, you know. And he said he had to be delicate about this because his coach was a wide receiver and had never played that, and he just learned the stuff out of books and coaching clinics.
Oh, no.
Doesn't, which most coaches are like, it doesn't mean they don't
yeah.
be good at it,
yeah.
but there's nuances at the higher level that, you know, players get away with when they prove it, you know. If you know, J.J. Watt didn't prove it, or Kyle Van Noy didn't prove that they could freelance at the right time, they wouldn't be starting as talented as they were, and coaches would put up with it, but because they know when and when not to. But, you know, my buddy Ryan had to say to him, listen, Coach, we have some really talented guys. They're all very good at freelancing. Everybody does it. In the NFL, they do it. I'm not trying to ask you to do it all the time. Just give us enough leeway to let us be the athletes we are to play our game. Because we're conceptually going to recognize some tells that the guard's going to have, or that the center's going to have, or that the tackle's going to have, and we're going to know when we should run a game, even though it looks like we shouldn't, or know when to take the inside path, even though you're telling us we should take the outside path here on this play. And the coach finally was like, "Okay, but if this doesn't work, you're going back to my way." And Cal was like basically one snap away from the national championship. You know,
see?
So this is what happens in the NFL when we talk about development. And yeah, to get to your thing about Jason McClellan as your last guy, he's got that NFL build. He's competent. He, to me, kind of reminds me of like a Jonathan Williams type of back. Could have a long career in this league, but probably not the guy that you're expecting to be a starter.
Oh no, for sure. He's a backup. He's a tool player. The thing, if we're going to close the show out, that because I think that better than Jason McClellan is this point you just made about coaching and about how well that works. The Buffalo Bills have a running back positions coach who played running back, right? He was a collegiate running back. And he is the second most successful running backs coach in team history. And then you look at the players who have come up under his tutelage since 2017 when he came in with Sean McDermott. He's been one of the longest tenured position coaches in terms of he's never moved. He's remained the running backs coach from the day he was hired to today. They like what he's bringing to the table, and he's gotten to oversee the career, you know, kind of the end of LeSean McCoy's career in 2017. On into the Chris, who went to Houston? Devin Singletary. Who you were telling me it was going to be okay after I was apoplectic about Devin Singletary, and you were like, no, this isn't a bad thing. He's going to be okay. And he was, and he still is. You know, you saw what he did last year for Houston. But it's this idea that you could see one consistent theme with Bills running backs, and that it's that they're at least there's some growth taking place. Now, depending on where their ceiling is, that kind of dictates where they land. But the fact remains is that you're watching growth, and that's encouraging in a league where there isn't a whole lot of instruction and there's not a whole lot of teaching taking place.
Well, Kelly Skipper probably is at least telling them the right things to work on.
Yes.
And they're doing it.
Yes.
And maybe he's giving some suggestions about who to work with, where to go, when to do it, and or who to give them a curriculum. And that's probably the wise thing.
Yep.
Because – you know, that's all you really need at that point, and then they need to take care of it. Because remember, in college, I remember my buddy Chad Spann, a running back who's now a running backs coach. He's worked with a number of guys. I've actually hooked him up with a couple of guys. He would tell me, he's like, yeah, when I was at NIU and I led the NCAA in touchdowns when Cam Newton was the Heisman winner, he's like, you know, they tell us where to go, when to wake up, make sure they send people to check. Our day is accounted for all of maybe about an hour and a half, you know, all day long, because they need to cover their assets and make sure everything's right or else the school gets flat. They treat us like we're, you know, the assets in that certain mm-hmm. way, but it's like kindergarten. You go to the NFL, it's like, you're grown ass men. Do what you want. Do what you need to do.
Oh yeah.
Make sure that you perform.
If we're cutting you a paycheck, we expect you to be a professional. This is where you take that jump. And so it's nice to know that in a class with so many juicy prospects and obviously a need for the Buffalo Bills, that this class not only has deeper talent that should be available in areas where the Bills have a plethora of draft picks, not, you know, we don't know what trades will take place. It seems almost like the Bills are gearing themselves up for one. But even besides that, there's depth to this class that could still be useful if coached properly and if taught the right things, or if at least encouraged and sent in the right directions. And in that way, that should make Bills fans feel pretty good about our prospects of coming out of this with a player who, if they decide to dip their toe in that pool, there's a lot of talent there to be had that could fit our select needs, and then our ability to cultivate that. That's why I love these conversations with you, man. Like, it's cerebral. You get into a lot of the nuance that people who just kind of, I don't want to say give a cursory overview of what they think a player is, we don't get that from them. And that's what you get from the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. So one more time, can you tell everybody where they can find it and where they can follow you on social media?
Sure. MattWaldman.com is where you can get it. $21.95. You get an 1,183-page book on quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end. It's bookmarked everywhere in PDF form, so you can choose your own adventure of how you want to look at it. And it's formatted in a way that I do understand that you are busy people. So you're going to get your information easily and know how to find stuff, but you're also going to find you can't stop reading it. The post-draft comes within 7 days after the last day of the draft, and gives you cheat sheets and basically all the, what do I do? Just tell me what I need to do. And there's also analysis in there. So, but I help you do things like when I talk about, I had Nick Chubb over Saquon Barkley. I wasn't telling you to pick him at 1.01 in your rookie draft. I was telling you, I did ADP analysis and said, hey, you can get him at the end of the second round and get a good first round player and still wind up with a top running back.
And because of you saying that, both Chris and I won and finished in second place in our fantasy league that year because we both took Nick Chubb. And I got him in like the ninth round of my draft.
Yeah. Yeah. So at MattWaldman.com, you can get those products for $21.95. I also do projections and rankings for all Dynasty players. It's a separate service for $24.95. It's kind of a companion to what I do with the RSP. So if you're really into Fantasy and Dynasty leagues, getting both will help you. And most people say it's what just the RSP pre-draft's worth the price of all of everything that I offer with both products. You can follow me on YouTube at Matt Waldman's RSP Film Room. I've done nearly 700 videos since like 2009, I think. And I do have my own podcast, Matt Waldman's RSP Cast. You can find it at a variety of outlets. And of course, X, you can find me at Matt Waldman. That's probably where I'm most active, which I know some people feel like X is a cesspool, but I cultivate a fun community. I think we have a good time. And I don't take myself too seriously in certain areas, and I don't let people take me too seriously either. I've had people joke with me today. Somebody goes, does somebody imagine Matt Waldman? Do you imagine Matt Waldman's voice when like you're reading the RSP? And so I copied that and reposted it and said, yeah, I do, except I imagine him inhaling helium before he does it.
Guys, this has been a lot of fun. Huge thank you to Matt Waldman for joining us once again. But we got to get the hell out of here. I'm Drew Geer. That's Chris Krueger. That's Matt Waldman. And this has been your Rock Pile Report.
All right. We're all done.
Now, I will tell you, my wife –